He would yell back, 385, Mike. 10 minutes later, I would notice Google at 383, and Smiley with an open position 4 points against him. Hey, Smiley, I thought your exit price was 385, I directed at him. Yes, I should have hit it, he replied agreeably. Generally, a head trader or partner should reluctantly order a trader to exit a position that they themselves are not watching. I had not watched Google's down move to 383, so I was not in a position to offer advice as to whether here at 383 Google was a good sale. But as a partner, one must demand that his traders follow trading fundamentals. You must expect that they have an exit plan for their every trade. If they disregarded this plan, then you should start a dialogue with your trader to exit this position. So I would ask, Smiley, where are you going to hit Google if it does not go back up? Bella, I'm going to hit it if it makes another down move. 10 minutes would pass. Google would trade up 3 points and then back down. I would look over at my risk monitor, and Smiley had not sold Google into the up move. And, in fact, it was now lower than the original 383. Hey, Smiley, isn't Google lower now? Yeah, I should have hit it. And so, obviously, talking with Smiley while he was trading did not work. Steve offered visualization drills to help him solve this mental block. We tried technique after technique, and we still could not get Smiley to hit out of the stocks that traded against him. Smiley wasn't really losing money. He would trade Google very well 80% of the time. But then when it traded against him, he simply could not pull the trigger and exit the bad trades. In turn, he would wipe out all of his gains from his positive trading days. Google would be 4 points against his exit price, and 4 hours after this exit price was violated, there would be Smiley still long. What is most memorable about all of this was that Smiley would be glued to his screen. Smiley never missed a tick in Google, his hands affixed to his keyboard in the ready position to smack the bids if Google moved lower. Then his exit price would arrive, but still Smiley would be locked into his screens with his hands affixed to his keyboard, not hitting the stock. It was as if he was in his ready position as a middle linebacker, fixated on the quarterback signals, but never reacted to the snap. He would still be long. In fact, the only thing that got Smiley to hit Google was if Steve ordered him to exit, or the bell was about to ring, as we did not allow Smiley to take out overnights. But even the bell did not get him out of Google. Now in the after-hours session, Smiley would sheepishly ask, what should I do? Of course, he was still smiling, as if he had just seen supermodel Gisele Bündchen pass in front of him. Steve and I would just shake our heads. Once Steve scoffed, you should hit it when it trades against you, or at least before the bell rang. Now Google had spread out. There were not fair prices to sell Google in the after-hours market. We would try to figure out the best price to exit, but since we were not trading Google ourselves, we were not in a position to know whether the price was a good sale or not. I can still picture Smiley at his trading station, in his trader position, ready to smack the bids like he was in charge of setting off a nuclear device if we were attacked. But he would never sell. It was like he was the great Warren Buffett and just did not believe in selling. This is a common problem amongst new traders. You must work at this. One prop firm runs their new traders through extensive drills during its training program to instill the habit of hitting stocks that trade against you. This firm reviews all trades of new traders, and if they see a trade with a loss over 20 cents, their new traders must explain why. If they fail to hit a stock that hits their exit price, they are placed on the demo the next day, and we know how demeaning the demo can be. As such, we teach visualization exercises to ensure our traders do not have this issue when they start trading live. If you struggle with this issue, start with this simple visualization exercise. Find a quiet place. Concentrate on your breath. Breathe in and out deeply. Concentrate on your breath flowing through your body. After a few minutes, start to visualize your trading station. In detail, recreate the sounds and visual stimuli you encounter while trading. Picture yourself long in a stock that you trade, with a predetermined exit plan. Imagine this stock trading against you, and see yourself hitting the bids. Pick another stock and repeat this process. Feed your mind with the ability to immediately hit stocks that trade against your price. I still love Smiley. It was just that trading was not for him. But I hear he is back in Hong Kong making kick-ass action movies and still smiling. They have unrealistic expectations. I have some great news for those who have just begun their trading careers. This is the worst you will ever be. Actually, that's not true. Unfortunately, a few traders are just bad all the time. Back when I started, there was so much prop money floating around that traders who had blown up would simply convince whoever would listen that they just needed a new environment. Like degenerate gamblers, they just churned through more of other people's money. Those days are over for the most part. See Andrew Spanton. It takes time to become a consistently profitable trader. There are many things that a prop firm does to speed up a new trader's learning curve, but they cannot make the learning curve disappear. Often, HR at a prop firm is asked in an interview how long it takes to start making money as a trader. Many interviewees offer that they have heard it can take a year. Some state that it is not possible to make money for 2 years. We have found that most of our better traders consistently make money before the end of their third month. But it can take a year for some others. But on average, at a prop firm, it takes about 6 to 8 months. Now, there are outliers. Some take even longer than a year. And as long as these traders are working hard and improving every day, then most prop firms will stick with them. On the flip side, there are a few who just start making money in their first month. Your reward after all this training time and underpaid apprenticeship is the trading skills to trade profitably in any market, from anywhere, and for the rest of your trading career. Essentially, this is a license to print money. But it takes time and experience to develop these skills. I compare this development to that of an All-American quarterback entering the NFL. How many make the Pro Bowl in their first year? How many, for that matter, have a successful season? Joe Flacco and Ben Roethlisberger are the only ones I can think of recently. Most take years to develop, including the Manning brothers, who have each won a Super Bowl. New traders, like NFL quarterbacks, need reps. All the weightlifting and film work goes only so far. You need to play. You need experience deciphering market patterns and tweaking your if-then statements for your trading setups. You must start recognizing patterns and developing trading systems for each setup. And these patterns must be practiced trading live. A trading simulator can help, but there is no substitute for trading when the lights are turned on, where your results count. At most prop firms, developing and experienced traders often have succeeded in almost everything they have done. They are ambitious. They expect a lot from themselves and early. They expect to be the best. Success has been their history, so why should trading be any different? When you begin as a trader, you most likely will be horrible. Let me be clear if I haven't been already. Boy, will you suck. This does not mean that you should lose a lot of money when you trade live. A good training program will only place you in setups where you can succeed. You will trade the easiest setups when you start. For example, for the first week live, new traders might only trade support and resistance levels. The next week, new traders then shift to breakout trades exclusively. The next week, they focus on momentum trades. After that, they focus on consolidation plays. But they start with one trade at a time. Some new traders expect to make money immediately, and when they don't, they let this affect their work. When they do not see the results that they expected, they start to focus on the wrong things. Some increase their tier size, hoping that this will help them make more money. Some do not prepare as hard because they are discouraged. What is the point of preparing hard if I cannot make money? They ask themselves. They start to take chances that an experienced trader would not take. This leads to big rips and only compounds the problem. Now they are in a bigger hole. While there is no one right way to make money trading, there is a right way to begin your trading career. When you first begin, you must focus on the process. You must allow 8 to 12 months to become consistently profitable. If you are not willing or are unable to do this, then you should find another occupation. Some are not able to commit this much time, either financially, at best you will be on a small draw, or psychologically, to this pursuit. If this is the case, then, again, please find another profession, because the market couldn't care less about your finances or mindset. I cannot express to you how unimportant the results are from your first 6 months of trading. Like spring training, they do not matter. For example, I lost $36,000 in my first 8 months of trading. During these nascent months, you are building the foundation for a 20-plus year career. Do you think in year 10 that your results in your first 6 months will be significant? They weren't for me. When it is time for you to buy a house, do you think you're going to do that from the money you made in your first 6 months as a trader, or year 3? Bet the latter. Becoming a consistently profitable trader just might be the hardest thing you will ever do in your life. Respect the process. You are not entitled to make it. You are entitled to work very hard for 8 to 12 months, be trained well, and find out how good you can be. Hollywood. In 2008, we trained a young person transitioning from the corporate world. He was dubbed Hollywood by a senior trader on our desk, and this nickname stuck. I'll explain further on. Hollywood had worked at an established financial institution and was looking to trade. In his 8 months of trading with us, he did very well, including 2 over-the-top months, and Hollywood had just begun. He was one of the top 3 young traders on our desk. Like his early trading days, Hollywood had plenty of success with the ladies. He was one of those guys who you wonder ever ate a carb, since he was so fit. A female photographer came in to shoot our desk one day and, before leaving, asked, "So what is Hollywood's deal?" I responded that he had a girlfriend. The photographer seemed disappointed. She added, "He doesn't take a bad photo. Let me know if things don't work out with his girlfriend." Hollywood was exceptionally talented and did well early, but he had unrealistic expectations about the start of his trading career. Mind you, he had come from the corporate world, so he was probably making over $100,000 a year before he started with us. But his take-home pay in his first 8 months was excellent for a new trader. Most traders do not hit their stride until between their second and third year. So making this kind of money this early was excellent progress. And remember, while he was making this kind of money, the world was changing. Investment banking was in a free fall. The big banks were obliterated. Even Goldman had to restructure its business model. Most were just trying to hang in there. Many rank-and-file Wall Street employees were fired or about to be axed. It was hard to imagine the big bonus jobs returning soon. So he was not only doing well at the start of his career, but comparatively, he was doing better than most on the street. But he had met a girl. I don't want to say that women with nesting instincts are the undoing of traders, per se, but this one halted Hollywood's progress. She lived closer to Philadelphia than New York City. Hollywood moved out of the city to be closer to her and traded remotely. Remotely, his work was just not the same. He was still making money, but he was away from the action. He did not have the younger traders around him pushing him to improve, like Moneymaker, Dr. Momentum, and Tickster. He could not see how they were making money. He was away from the environment that would force him to compete and get better. One day, out of the blue, Hollywood sent me an email resigning. He was unhappy with his progress of late. He thought a different career would be better for him. Hollywood, do you think it might have had something to do with that move you made for the girl? I sicked a senior trader on Hollywood to talk some sense into him. This was a task for his older equivalent and CNBC star, Jay Thoma. Jay Thoma has an appreciation for women not found in a million other guys, and he couldn't understand why a young, talented, good-looking 20-something would move out of the city for a girl. There were scores of them in the city, Jay Thoma reasoned. It was as if Jay Thoma's rationale for getting him back on board had nothing to do with trading, but rather the opposite sex. J. Toma blasted Hollywood for giving up the chance to meet all of those other women. His exact words were, "Why would you give up a chance to meet all that ass?" J. Toma has made a lot of money trading and in other investments throughout his career, and he likes to go out with the young guys. The young guns particularly look up to J. Toma regarding all the stuff that you might imagine traders did when they first came into money back in the day. At the bar, the guys gather around him to hear all his stories, like grandchildren on their grandfather's lap. Plus, he is an excellent trader. And he gets on them about seizing this opportunity to make a great deal of money so young and doing something so interesting. J. Toma reamed Hollywood out for giving up on this opportunity. He relayed that he had just begun and would only get so much better. Hollywood agreed to keep trading. Order had been restored in the world to J. Toma. But a short few weeks later, Hollywood quit again. There was nothing else we could do. Steve and I talked about Hollywood during some slow periods. When our desk went on a good run, I sometimes thought of Hollywood and guesstimated how much he would have made. Steve and I saw his talent. There was little doubt that he would have made a great deal of money trading with us. He was that good. We just could not convince Hollywood that it would take some more time. Hollywood had unrealistic expectations about how good he should be so early. Not a trading day goes by that I do not think about Hollywood. He should have been a success story, and had a whole subchapter about him with Dr. Momentum and Moneymaker in the chapter, "These Guys Are Good." He could have been the best trader on our desk. He already had the great trading nickname. Our desk, and apparently our photographer, misses him. He was a great guy and a ton of fun, but he possessed an unrealistic learning curve. I wish Steve, J. Toma, and I did not fail to convince him of this. A quick note here is in order. Prior to publication, I received a call from Hollywood. He wanted back in. I was getting a little worried about J. Toma there for a while. They'd rather be right than make money. There are some traders who just cannot admit that they are wrong. They develop a bias about a stock. When the stock does not trade as they expected, they are paralyzed. They insist that the stock will start acting as they expected and refuse to exit their positions. As I've explained earlier, successful intraday traders exit losing positions quickly. They are not emotionally invested with the market, proving their thesis correct about a stock. Consistently profitable traders are interested in making good trades. They accept that they cannot control the results. And holding a position that is trading against them because they are most interested in being proven correct is bad trading. Your job is not to be correct. Your job is not to make money. At the best prop firms, a new trader is taught to just focus on making good trades. See One Good Trade. The Mayor. When we first started, we worked with a colorful trader. HBO could develop a series after him. We will name the mayor. Uniquely, he would either show up to the office in a sweatsuit or a gorgeous Armani suit and tie. Maybe this should have been our first hint. The sweatsuit was, I must say, really nice, something Michael Jordan might be seen wearing at the Atlantis. It was one of those fancy Puma extra-comfortable sweatsuits. We were so young as a company that we had not created a dress code. Today, we don't allow sweatsuits to work. More important, we also do not allow a suit and tie. The mayor was a successful options trader. Once he began with us, we saw he had a great feel for stocks as well. The mayor held stocks for the entire move like a superstar trader. He had no fear. One day when he first began, the mayor made over $4,000. He made sure that everyone on our desk knew. "Look, I made $4,000. Exclaimed the mayor to the most attractive woman on our desk. Then to Steve, "I made $4,000. Then to G-Man, "I made $4,000. Then to me, "I made $4,000. You get the point by now. We were very happy for him. He had a child in Europe that he was supporting. And though boastful, his energy was contagious. Not to digress too much, but the mayor reminded me of my first boss when I worked in politics, the legendary and brilliant House Chairman of the Judiciary Committee in Connecticut, Richard D. Tulisano. Representative Tulisano was dubbed King Richard because no substantive piece of legislation could pass in the state of Connecticut without his approval. Richard and I would walk down the streets of Hartford, often in an undesirable area, as was his habit. No matter what street we walked down, people would call out to my boss. "Hey, Richard," locals would yell out from their apartment windows. Richard, also intellectually curious, would yell back and ask how so-and-so was, or one of their relatives. He knew everyone, and everyone knew him. The mayor was the type of guy who would have his name called out as he walked down a street. And he loved trading. After the mayor showed his promise, he asked to trade from home, and that was fine with us. We were happy to add a successful trader to our young desk. But then, one day, trading PD, we noticed he was holding a position many points against him. Steve emailed the mayor, cautioning him about his position. The mayor explained that the stock would turn around and was still confident in the position. Steve asked for his exit price. The mayor said another 50 cents. The stock did not rebound, the market closed, and the mayor was still long. Steve called the mayor and asked him to close out his position. The mayor predicted PD would open up tomorrow. Steve remarked to just close the position and start over the next AM. The mayor did this, but was noticeably unhappy with us. PD opened up a little, and the mayor expressed his disappointment at being ordered to close out, with an unusually long email explanation supporting his PD bias. Steve explained that he could have exited PD points before the close and gotten a much better price than the opening price the next AM. Despite this hiccup, the mayor continued to trade and show promise. Then again we noticed he was holding PD well against him. He and Steve went through the same rigmarole, but this time Steve let him hold on. The next AM, PD opened up down. The mayor was still long. Steve emailed to hit the stock. The mayor pleaded to keep the position, explaining why he was correct. Steve asked for his exit price, and the mayor gave it. A few hours later, PD had not rebounded. Steve emailed the mayor again, who explained that he was still correct with his position. We did not trade PD, so we listened, but as a young firm, we were still held hostage by his talent. Steve again asked for his exit price, and the mayor again gave it. PD did not rebound, the stock hit his exit price, but the mayor had not exited. So Steve put him out of his misery and closed his position. Unsurprisingly, the mayor sent us an angry email. Steve offered his empathy about the loss, but explained that the price action was most important. Despite all the theoretically valid reasons the mayor gave for his thesis, it was not as important as the price action. The mayor insisted that he was still correct, and for us to watch PD trade the next few days. The mayor was so upset that we hid out of his position that he never traded with us again. We were down some money on him, and we were no longer going to overvalue his talent. Ultimately, the mayor would have rather been right than make money on PD. Not as a personal vendetta against us, just for his own ego. He failed to let the price action be the ultimate arbitrator. Developing a bias can be helpful when trading a stock, but when the price action contradicts your theory, then you must exit. Unfortunately, we never learned how good the mayor could have been as a trader. For those interested, PD did not trade higher over the next few days. For those who are not interested, now you are thinking like a trader. Don't forget, you're a trader, not an investor. Often I remark playfully on our desk to new traders, "It's called trading, not investing." We do not care where Research in Motion or Apple or Goldman Sachs trade in 2 years. We do wish personally that they are higher, perhaps for our PA, but as a trader, our personal wishes are irrelevant. When I first started making money, I proudly bought a basket of the best technology stocks for my personal account. I bought Akamai, Amazon, Intel, Microsoft, Broadcom. I had all of the best. And I waited till these stocks pulled back considerably to important technical support levels, I remember buying Broadcom at 85 and declaring that this was a steal. I was pumped. I was counting the cash in my head, but I couldn't have been any more wrong. Even when the internet bubble burst and I lacked shorting skills, I have never suffered serious annual losses as an intraday trader. The largest losses I've ever suffered were in my personal account as an investor. Not a wimpy down 10% either. I'm talking substantial losses. I bought on margin. I did not create exit prices for my stocks that traded well against me. I lost 80 to 90% in some instances. I suppose I had a strategy. It was to buy, hold, and pray. I was just long and very wrong. Like many investors in 2000 and 2001 when the bubble had burst, I would just not look at the statements in my PA. During this period, a common phrase heard at a cocktail party, your local diner, or a gym was, I don't open my statements anymore. It is too depressing. It was too painful. I remember riding the subway with my dad talking to some stranger on the way back from a Yankees game. Side note about the Yankees, my favorite team. During the great Yankees run, my dad and I had season tickets. We were at Game 7 when Boone hit the series-ending homer against Wakefield. We were at both Arizona games when Tino, then Brocious, tied the game with two outs in the ninth. We were also there when the young Marlins pitchers of Beckett, Burnett, and Pavano stymied the thunderous Yankee bats. And I remember vividly talking to this gentleman whom we struck up a subway conversation with about stocks. During the internet bubble, it was common for people anywhere to talk about stocks. At cocktail parties, after attending mass, on the subway after work. Often you barely knew these people. And when people found out that I was a trader, they automatically assumed I was as knowledgeable as Jim Rogers. Non-professional traders hunted for tips about the next hot stock. This Yankees subway stranger asked, "What should I be in?" And I told him what I had bought. I prefaced my advice with an explanation that I was not a financial advisor and that I was a short-term trader. Despite my efforts, this distinction was lost on this particular New Yorker. Then I remember saying the stupidest thing I can ever remember saying. Nonsensically, I uttered, "These are the stocks that I own. They are risky, but I am young, here it comes, and I can afford to withstand substantial losses." Intellectually, I can understand that a young person can withstand substantial losses in their PA more so than someone who is retired. But I just remember the way that I said it. I was not concerned that I would suffer these losses. It was like a throwaway line, like those financial advertisements where, at the end of the ad, some guy verbally sprints through the mandatory risk disclosure. Why I thought it was okay to withstand substantial losses, I cannot answer. This is illogical. I was a dope and a horrible investor. I was swept up in creating my American dream. People owned stock during this time period, so I owned too. There was little reflection on my true downside risk or the consequences if I actually lost a substantial amount of money. I probably lost more investing than my grandfather had made working his entire life. Why did I think this was acceptable? So I remember this life lesson. I am a trader and not an investor. The risk of investing is much greater than my own trading, nor am I trained as an investor. I do not study long-term trends. I have never developed a long-term investing strategy. There are professionals whose advice you are better off relying on. During this latest near collapse of our banking systems, I received calls from average investors asking for my advice. Most of these calls transpired near Dow 6700. Soon after, the Dow bounced to almost 9600. And I told each of these callers that I was not an expert in long-term investing. Many were worried that their 401ks were being obliterated. What a terrible thing to fear. During 2008, many watched helplessly as much of their retirement evaporated. When I hung up from these calls, I know that on the other end some callers were confounded how I could not offer advice. How can he be a trader and not be able to offer investing advice? This is not what I do, and I learned this lesson very clearly back in 2001. My investing thoughts are probably not much more advanced than the average investor. But sit me down on a trading floor, let me look at some charts, provide the news for some stocks, and I can make money 90% of any trading day. These are my skills. This is what I do. In fact, sit me down on a trading desk and give me access to the level 2. Cut me off from the news. Turn off CNBC. Shut down my charts. Limit my access to capital. Seclude me in a room without any information from fellow traders, and I can still grind out a living. I am a trader. There is a right way to start your trading career, and there are things you can do to ruin your dream. So much of your success depends on how you approach your learning curve. Prop firms are littered with so many who failed, who never had to. I hope you have learned from the failings of some others that we have shared. There is a right way to start your trading career, and if you do, then you will learn just how good you can be as a trader. There are too many failed prop and individual traders walking around Main Street and the blocks of New York City who could have made it, if only they found a way to persevere. Chapter 6. Live to Play Another Day. You are in your mid-30s, married, with 3 beautiful girls. You own a private equity fund which you financed from a small percentage of your trading profits. You own multiple apartments in New York City and commercial real estate throughout the country. You have walked every golf course you have ever longed to play. You took your wife to Fiji on your honeymoon for a month. Of course, you also own a Porsche. Your personal trading account is flush with working capital. You are paid to make frequent television appearances on the country's leading financial network, CNBC. New traders crowd your desk after every close, hungry for tidbits of your market knowledge. Your prop firm entrusts you with as much buying power as you need. Every day you wake up and get to do exactly what you love to do. Trade. Who are you? You are Jay Toma, senior trader at a prop firm. You are an experienced trader who lived to play another day. One of my favorite trading expressions is live to play another day. This simple saying says so much about the mindset of a market veteran. If you can just find a way to hang in there, then the good times will come. If you can find a way to stay in the game, then you can become an experienced trader. But you have to survive, and some just can't. In this chapter, we will discuss some typical landmines that the new trader must avoid, such as not believing, making predictions, of course getting fired, and starting too quickly. You will meet some of the traders I have worked with at prop firms spanning my career, including Jay Toma, to highlight some pitfalls to avoid. Perhaps one day you will earn the privilege of being a successful market veteran. Jay Toma, From the Abyss to CNBC. A young trader, not yet 24, sits on the couch of a prominent psychologist and starts, "I am afraid to trade. I just lost 80% of my trading capital. I don't know what to do." Sitting on the couch of a shrink? What is wrong with this guy? Suck it up, you wuss, and start making money. This is not talked about a lot by veteran traders, but the previous scene is not uncommon. But what is commonplace is for the market veteran, whether it is visiting a professional, taking up yoga, changing his diet, or breaking up with a distracting girlfriend, to find a way to survive. When Jay Toma first began as a prop trader, he made 10 to 30% of his P&L. His goal was to trade his own retail account where he could keep 100% of his trading profits. Jay Toma needed to make about $250,000 his end to trade his own account. $250,000 was not even enough money, so he had to borrow another $250,000 at 12% to sufficiently fund his trading account. So essentially, he had to make millions before he ever had enough of his own personal money to trade his own retail account. And when he did, he got to keep 100% of the profits after paying commissions on his trades, which were as much as 600% higher than they are today. Ouch! Jay Toma made enough to trade his own account. What an accomplishment for a young man not yet 24. And then the merciless market entered the room. In J. Thoma's first 3 months trading his own account, he lost almost all of his money, more than $200,000. The market ripped into his trading account with the ferocity of a tsunami. He was down to his last $50,000. The average trader might have become depressed. Would you? But J. Thoma remarkably just shrugged it off. He sought out a prominent performance psychologist and worked to improve some emotional issues which were hindering his trading. J. Thoma had become afraid to trade. And these sessions, which many professional traders sit through yet never talk about, worked. More than a decade later, he is still doing what he loves, trading. This well-known sports psychologist offered training techniques to improve J. Thoma's trading performance, which he still utilizes today. A daily journal was suggested and implemented. A plan for every trade was discussed and is now followed. Ambitious goals were set and surpassed. Favorite setups were identified and exploited. In our game, the market will demand that you change. In our ring, the market will, with thunderous blows, often, unforeseeably, knock you to the floor, leaving you bloody and beaten. And it will look down at you mercilessly, daring for you to get back on your feet for another beatdown. And you will have a choice. You can quit, like many of my former colleagues have done over the years, or you can find a way to hang in there. And if you live to play another day, enormous trading opportunities will come. Let me share an old-school trading anecdote often shared to new traders by J. Thoma. A Lafayette graduate in his trading class walked into the managing partner's office at our original prop firm to quit and proclaimed, "There is no more opportunity in this market. We cannot make money anymore how we trade." This was September of 1998. The internet boom was just about to begin and rain cash on its market players. J. Thoma went on to make $1 million plus that year, while his classmate left to work for his father's plastic, or something like that, business. Don't focus on making predictions. One of the more difficult trading scenarios for me is the presence of an overly aggressive seller or buyer. After trading for 12 years, I've watched enough tape to know where a stock should be trading intraday. I can sense by the penny where a stock should be trading 98% of the trading day. Now, stocks are often close enough to being properly priced so that I do not make a trade. But as an intraday trader, I exploit short-term inefficiencies. When I sense a stock is too low, then I either cover my short or get long. When I sense a stock is overbought, then I either sell or get short depending on the intraday trend of the stock. Sounds simple enough, right? Buy low, sell high. Isn't this what we first learned about the stock market during our seventh grade trading competition? But sometimes institutions enter orders to the market in a state of pure panic, and the traders executing these orders are incompetent. These pikers will indiscriminately drive the price down, only exacerbating their mandate to sell, sell, sell. Who could forget Randolph and Mortimer in the frozen concentrated orange juice pits in the 1980s classic movie Trading Places, propping up their fainted trader who got caught long to the tune of hundreds of millions? One of my trading plays is to start a position when I sense the wrong price and assume the stock will revert to its mean. This is called a fade trade. Remember, I spend 6.5 hours every day, and have for the past 12 years, watching stocks trade intraday. My expertise covers where stocks should be priced intraday. My training has left me as good at this as Tiger's ability to read the way a putt ought to break. And yet, sometimes we are met with lesser traders who just cannot trade, traders who just cannot see the break like I can. And they pump or dump stock at the wrong price. The problem occurs when these jokers have more capital at play than I do to move the market. I take a loss because I hit out of my stock as it hits my exit price. And then, after the order is filled, after the panic subsides, the stock reverts to the proper price. But I am out of the position. And I have essentially lost money because someone is not good at his job. This is very frustrating. But this happens every day, every hour, in multiple stocks. I do not make many predictions. I develop biases. But if my biases are not confirmed by the tape, then I don't bite. Mark Douglas in The Disciplined Trader wrote, If you believe it likely to have a definite bullish or bearish effect market-wise, do not back your judgment until the action of the market itself confirms your opinion. If I get caught long, spot an overly aggressive seller, the stock hits my exit prices, then I sell. I do not hold because I think that this overly aggressive seller is a putz. If I did, I would have blown up my trading account on multiple occasions by now. Once a stock hits my exit price, then I exit. I live to play another day. The markets can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent, said economist John Maynard Keynes. While Keynes is long since dead, at least doom and gloom economist Gary Shilling and his protege Dennis Gartman borrow the saying from time to time. And I do not get to set the prices for stocks, the institutions do. The markets couldn't care less what I think about the proper price of a stock. New traders sometimes make the error of believing that trading is about making predictions and that they can move the market with their 1,000 shares, or worse yet, their young opinions. Crabby, how predictions harm the new trader. We had a really smart trader with us a while back. Crabby loved the markets, but he was obsessed with predicting the markets 6 months out. That is not his job, nor mine. For example, Crabby would ask me where the price of oil was going to be in 6 months. I would answer, "I have no idea." And Crabby would look back at me funny as if I ought to know that. I could sense him thinking, "How can a partner at a proprietary trading firm not have an opinion on the price of oil in 6 months?" Then Crabby started asking me essentially the same question daily, but phrased differently. For example, he would ask, "Do you think oil can top $60 by the end of the summer?" And I would answer, "I have no idea." And Crabby would look at me funny. After a while, when Crabby asked me the same question, I would look at him funny. I wanted to beat him to looking at me funny. And he would respond by looking at me even funnier. I had no response to his funnier look. Damn it. Crabby spent all of his free time scouring reports predicting the future price of oil. Crabby spent none of his time after the markets closed working on his trading skills. As a short-term trader, even if you develop the correct bias about the direction of the market, stock, or sector, you still must possess the trading skills to capture these moves. Wasting your time on predictions is energy and time lost for what will truly make all the difference, skill development. Derek Jeter does not spend time working on his fastball. He is not a pitcher. And you should not sharpen your skills as an analyst. You are a trader. Also, as a prop trader, you must sit and process the data the market offers with an open mind. Too many traders color the data the market offers with their own biases. I saw this with too many traders in August of 2009. Traders developed a bias that AIG should trade lower since its future prospects were glum. Identifiable buyers and intraday uptrends were dismissed because these traders colored the data, only seeing that which supported their preconceived short biases. Thus, they missed the AIG move from 14 to 50, and they got caught in too many short squeezes. Crabby eventually moved on, as he couldn't make money as a trader. Prop traders crushed the tremendous trading opportunities in oil in 2007 and 2008. We did so short and long. At no time did any of us intraday prop traders ask where we thought the price of oil would be in the next 6 months. Frankly, we had no idea and didn't care. We were too busy making money. It's called trading, not predicting. The market doesn't care what you think. Making predictions is just not what we do as intraday prop traders. We leave that to the hedge funds. A more cynical writer may have rewritten the previous sentence to something like, "We leave that to the hedge funds who lost 40% in 2008. We are intraday traders interested in what stocks will move the most today. How we can make money today is our obsession and expertise. With all humility, there is a great scene with this author from the TV documentary Wall Street Warriors that magnifies this point. With the cameras rolling, a new class that we were training gathered around my desk to discuss the importance of the prints. I made this fundamental trading point. The institution set the prices, and not me. GS is not calling me up on the phone asking me where I think a stock is headed. No one cares what I think. And this is an important point to understand as a new trader. Dr. Steenbarger, the godfather of trading psychology, author of 3 trading books, including his latest, The Daily Trading Coach, leading blogger at TraderFeed, and the most giving trading coach who sets the bar for all of us, colorfully offered in a recent blog, "The market doesn't give a rat's posterior about your economic and political views. Trade what the market is doing, not what you'd like it to do in your nihilistic fantasies. No one cares where you think a stock is headed." Macro strategist Barry Ritholtz, in an interview with Wall Street Cheat Sheet, offered these thoughts on positions not working your favor. When it's apparent that something isn't working out, just move out. That means just sell it and redeploy capital elsewhere. Just don't marry a position. Bill Miller, star mutual fund manager, was a great trader for many years, but it seems that his model says if something isn't working and it's going lower, buy more. He did that with Freddie Mac and got killed. So if no one cares what you think about a stock, then you shouldn't. Just trade. Watch the price action. If your stock confirms your bullish bias, then get long. If your stock confirms you were wrong, then trade your stock from the short side. Too many new prop traders never embrace this philosophy, and as a result, never experience the best markets. I received an email from a very accomplished young man recently with an obvious passion for trading. He had traded different products and still had not finished his studies. I was looking forward to meeting him. When we are interested in a candidate, we ask that they answer some questions. This young man answered one of our questions, which I would like to discuss. And it helps delineate one clear advantage of being an intraday trader. Intraday traders can make money whether our predictions are accurate or not. Please share a life experience that demonstrates your ability to be patient. I would like to take an example from my trading experience to demonstrate my ability to be patient. I had the feeling that the commodities prices were being driven up incessantly, and part of it was speculation. When oil was at $136, I felt it was overpriced and thought that there will be a sharp drop in commodity prices. As lower oil would support the dollar, I took a long dollar position. Oil prices continued to rise and even touched $145. I still was convinced that there would be a fall in oil prices and did not close out my position. Soon after, oil prices dropped drastically, which led to a rise in the dollar strength. I booked profits when oil had dropped to $120. I think this example shows that I have the ability to be patient even when the chips are down. As an intraday trader, we are not beholden to the accuracy of our predictions. G-Man blogged about the top in oil right before it turned. Pretty good call, G-Man. I think he also called the bottom of the dollar, by the way. Steve is also scarily talented at calling tops and bottoms in stocks. But G-Man pointed out that he would seek confirmation of his thesis from the inside market. This is the point. As intraday traders, we develop theories daily, and those are great. But our P&L is not dictated by our predictions, but our trading skill. And when you develop trading skills, it does not matter whether you accurately predict the top in a sector. It just matters that the sector is active, as long as it moves. If you were to take a look at G-Man's trading records, you would see, at a minimum, 17 of 20 net positive days per month. It is almost like something really strange needs to happen for him to be negative. G-Man recently ripped it up 3 days in a row, and he was banging and cursing. Steve sent him on vacation. He just needed a break. This was the something strange that was interfering with his trading results. Our trading skills enable our consistency. Presently, CNBC is full of very bright people predicting that oil is going back to over $100 a barrel, even $200. I tend to think those who believe we are headed for $100 a barrel are more persuasive, but honestly, I really don't know, nor am I going to pretend that I do. I do know that if oil goes to $100, I'm going to make money. And if oil goes to $200 a barrel, I am going to make even more money. I leave the predictions for others and just take advantage of the readable moves along the way toward those predictions. If you do not, then you will never be in the game to take advantage of the outsized trading opportunities. You must believe. There is something that cannot be taught to new traders, just like those pesky New York Mets fans who, by the way, my father prefers would stop calling into his favorite sports talk station, WFAN, and ripping his Yanks. You must believe. You must believe that you will become great. I am sensitive to discuss intangible things because trading is mostly about skill development and discipline. What does this mean that you must believe? What does this have to do with skill development? Actually, it has a lot to do with it. Let's discuss. The market will carpet-bomb trading data when you first begin, proving that you cannot become a successful trader. At the start, you will most likely be net negative your first 3 months. You can look at this data and easily get discouraged. You can let this typical beginning data affect your fourth and fifth and sixth month, which will manifest more data that can convince you out of the market. If you do not believe, you will use this data as proof that you cannot become a successful trader. You can be a consistently profitable trader using a system that starts not yielding profits. You will have to tweak this system just a little to make money once the market changes. If you do not believe, instead of tweaking the system and then measuring your results, you become consumed with the bad results. You lose confidence. You start to question whether tweaking your system will work. And then this lack of confidence affects your every trade. Since you do not believe, now you have data to support your conclusion that you are destined to fail. With any trading system, the market will offer you exits for your trades that are poor. If you are starting a position, the market may try to shake you out. If your confidence is low, you will most likely give in to the market's bullying and take your loss. This is what you have prepared your mind for since your confidence is low. On the contrary, if your position starts to work for you, you are more likely to exit too early. Once you have a chance to lock in a profit, you do so, sacrificing further significant profits. Or there is the chance you will hold a position too long, being offered the opportunity to exit like you had planned, but in the mindset of losing money. So you are more likely to let that stock reverse and wipe out your profits. The market demands that you believe. You can train at the best prop firm in the country, but if you do not believe that you will succeed, then you will not. If you cannot visualize yourself as a successful trader, then you will never become one. If you never obtain the confidence that you will succeed, then you will not survive to enjoy the most opportunistic markets. Credit Derivatives Trader, CDT. She did not believe. I read the resume in front of me as I sat behind my office desk, beneath a framed picture of Derek Jeter barreling face-first into box seats at the old Yankee Stadium. The candidate waiting nervously, as I learned, was an Ivy League graduate, held a master's degree, was a former credit derivatives trader, let's call her CDT, and also sported a nose ring. After answering a few of my questions, I instantly placed her in the category of people much smarter and hipper than me. As I remember this interview, I liked everything about her, save one thing. She was indeed brilliant, talented, and loved trading. But there was a hesitancy about her and this job. The best traders at most prop firms would sign their contract a second after an invitation. I hoped perhaps she was just doing her due diligence, but I was left with a different impression. She was not sure she could succeed as a prop trader. What was CDT doing in front of me? One day, CDT walked into work and was down $14 million on a position she could not exit. Note, we cut our traders off a lot earlier than $14 million. There was no market for her positions. She could hold or hit the bids at effectively zero. They fired a bunch of people in her department at the big bank where she worked, so CDT was now in my office. Chop SMB. On a side note regarding female traders, I was talking with a woman at the Traders Expo in New York who had visited some prop desks. She asked why prop firms don't have more women trading with them. As I write, less than 5% of our prop traders are female. Not many women apply to prop firms, with fewer than 2% of our applications sent by women. I wish there were more. While trading has often been a man's domain, there are several success stories of female traders. When I started my career, I sat next to an excellent one. In fact, she made so much money that she is now semi-retired. She bought a house in the suburbs, works on her gardening, and enjoys playing tennis. I posed the question to the Twitter and StockTwits community as to why more women do not apply to prop firms. A respected trader of the StockTwits community, Anne-Marie 2006, a must-read blogger and friend of our firm, speaking about most but not all women, offered an explanation. Anne-Marie 2006 at SMB Capital. Trading has great uncertainty associated with it. It's also a place that gives little to no security. Key elements in female psyche. Anne-Marie 2006 at SMB Capital. Also, trading is confrontational. You have to stare at your mistakes. Women hate that too. Most women are avoiders. Sadly, at the same time, some male traders need to be educated at prop firms about how to behave. Firm leaders have to say things like, "Take down that wallpaper on your screen. Put the strip club passes out of public view." Or, "Watch your language." A prop firm is not a boiler room. CDT was too talented to pass on because of one partner's hunch. At least, that is what my partner Steve scolded. CDT followed all of what we asked. She was the last person to leave the office during her training. When she started trading live, she often remained the last person to leave. She was well prepared and stayed focused during the day. CDT went out of her way to ask excellent trading questions to our senior traders and me. Her results, not surprisingly, were at the top of her class, but she had a weakness. She did not believe. Before CDT was to trade live, she asked to speak with me before the open. She started, "I'm not ready to trade live. I need some more time." Let me be clear, she was trading firm capital. Whose money did she think she would lose if she indeed was trading a few days early? Also, she was ready. Her work was excellent, dare I say impeccable. This was my second major whiff of her uncertainty. Now, this may have been because of her recent past. CDT had an excellent job at a Tier 1 bank that blew up. CDT worked hard her whole life to secure such a job. She went to the right schools, received the right grades, and learned the right way to act in a corporate culture. Heck, she was allowed to trade products that produced a $14 million loss overnight. And then that world was destroyed. Managing partners at prop firms see this quite often. Some people just have doubts, and it is our job to remove them before they impact their trading. So, during a subsequent sit-down with CDT, I said, "You have all the ability in the world to do this job. It is natural to doubt your exit strategy. I do of my own at times. What is most important is to be asking the right questions. What is most important is to be thinking about the right stuff. And you are. You need experience exiting stocks that trade in your favor. After months of practice, you will improve. Just keep thinking about your exit strategy. This is excellent work." One of the things you had to love about CDT was that she enjoyed even the inappropriate banter on our desk. When one of our traders said something over the line, I would scold, "I don't know if you have to use language like that." And then CDT would retort, "Oh, Bella, please, I've heard a lot worse." And then she would continue with a comment more inappropriate than one of the guys. And the traders on the desk loved that. Apparently, I cannot control the guys or the women on our desk. Prop firm partners have had many talks with new traders to boost their confidence. After all, many of us are trading coaches. One of the better traders I had to fire up every day for 2 straight months. "You're going to be the best trader on the desk," I encouraged. Once he got to where I thought he'd be, I stopped with the talks, and he slipped a notch. Another talented trader I repeatedly told, you can become an excellent trader. This developing trader knew nothing but negative months, but I had to keep telling him that he could succeed. He finally became a solid trader. So these talks with CDT did not necessarily